This was almost one of the most joyous episodes of For Buck's Sake in our 11-season history. Almost. As the clock struck precisely 87 minutes and 34 seconds, Vucks all around the world, from the terraces of Hindmarsh to the couches of Melbourne and everywhere in between, the scenes and celebrations were up there with some of the wildest. The ecstasy of a late winner scored by FVS's own Matt Grimaldi. Then the agony of having that sensational goal wiped off. This one hurts, folks. My name is Dave. I am your navigator through some treacherous waters this week. My shipmates are here again, Clarkie and Buds, to ensure we sail through this smoothly.
Ahoy there, fellow Vuctorians. All aboard the HMAS Calamity, because that is all I can use to describe the state of what happened to us on Saturday night. That stings. Everyone else in the league is reveling in it. But damn, that one hurt. And it just had to be under those circumstances, didn't it? It's forced our hand to have to talk about VAR. It should be a thrilling episode.
Why always us? It just doesn't fucking... It doesn't compute with me sometimes, this, but in my usual style and manner, we should never have been in that position in the first place, but fuck me, it just shades of the euphoria of the Andy Naboo double against Sydney on debut many, many years ago from our boy Grimaldi, just absolutely fucking cock a hoop. You don't know whether you should celebrate goals anymore in this league. You should just wait 5 minutes. It's like the weather in Melbourne. It's like if you're happy or unhappy with the weather, wait 5 minutes. If you're happy or unhappy with the goal, wait 5 minutes. Because chances are in this league, it's going to get fucking chalked off.
You're not wrong there, brother. And it's fair to say that these topics are going to be unpacked and explored like fucking Burke and Wills on this episode tonight, today, whenever you're listening to this, because we've got a lot to get through. There's a lot of talking points, and unfortunately, two 2-1 losses for us to cover, as well as some bits and pieces we plan to chew the fat on, the balls of steel. Then we preview the Big Blue this coming Monday, the 26th of January. So there's no point waiting any longer. Let's get this show on the road. You're listening to the one and only For Buck's Sake. Okay, gents, Saturday night just gone in front of a full house there at Hindmarsh Stadium. The scene was set, beautiful day, and we all know, having visited Hindmarsh on several occasions, what it can be like as a travelling Melbourne Victory away fan, and our fans once again did not disappoint with their attendance. Amazing. Filling out that corner like no one else does, but it was a putrid first half. The football, and Buds, I knew that this is a sticking point, a sore point for you.
Yes, sir.
More than me, more than probably Clarkie, or maybe equally to Clarkie, but, you know, you touched on the fact that we only have ourselves to blame, and in our own discussions, I sort of agreed, but also lamented and was just in pain at the fact that, you know, this was within our grasp, and yet it slipped away and we came away with nothing. Kick things off for us, please, old mate.
I'm sick to fucking death of Melbourne Victory games and this side coming out in the first few minutes of the game like they've just fucking strolled off the Copacabana. Like, they're... Sometimes I feel like there's a very famous Chelsea fan from India who fucking loses his nana. There's no fight. There's no passion. There's nothing. Like,
I love that guy.
Yeah, that guy. Sometimes you watch this side and you're like, what the fuck is going on here? To me, when we started this game, right, we are the away team, whatevs. We look unfit. We are like stunned mullets most of the time within the first 10, 15 minutes of a game. And we start games like we've just woken up. And that's what I'm basically saying. We just take it easy. And it was the same the week before against Western Sydney, just acting like it was going to be fait accompli and we're going to get this win. And then when we do get opportunities early on, we lack composure, and we lack composure big time this week. That's all on Dillis. That's all on him. And then, I mean, I don't even need to tell our listeners, viewers of Melbourne Victory, about the defensive setup this year. That defensive setup was just all at sea. All at sea. And Sarah got fucking turned inside out and was in no man's land. Jackson, mate, I'm hanging for Roddy Miranda to come back into this side. Absolutely hanging. And Trev again didn't really hold his end up either. Combine that with Nishan Volupele probably putting together the most wasteful 67 minutes you've ever seen in a Melbourne Victory shirt, and whatever the fuck it was version of Denny Genreau that turned up for this game, especially in the first half, it was diabolical. Isolated first 45 minutes, diabolical Melbourne Victory football. Absolutely fucking disgraceful. And the coach didn't seem to think there was much wrong with the inability of Virgos to do anything. Denny Genreau being an absolute passenger and a calamity in midfield. And just fuck whatever it was on that right-hand side between Insera and Volupele that was unfolding was fucking comical.
Yeah, it was a tough one. Nish was dreadful and wasteful of good opportunities. 2 weeks ago when he scored against Perth, we're like, all right, he's got the goal. Hopefully that can see him just find a patch of form. But, geez, when Nish is not on song, it's pretty bloody bad at times. And just what seemed to be the best part of that sort of little 4 week run where sort of, you know, Dorigo, Mata and Genreau, it seems to have completely fallen apart. And I'm with you, Budza. I feel like it's that game felt like, especially in the first half, Genreau was like dragging Dorigo and Juan down with him. It was just like he was in quicksand and he was just like grabbing onto blokes for dear life and just taking them with truly dreadful stuff.
The resurgence that we had that saw us win 4 on the bounce had a lot to do with some of those players that you talked about. And Nish was, you know, his return from injury. He was a big part of that. And yeah, look, I have it down here in my notes that we need to talk about Nish. And I had guests over on Saturday during the course of the day and the evening. And I made a comment on our Discord that I felt really bad about making, that Nish isn't going to the World Cup. And
no.
I hated myself after saying that, in the sense that I obviously want our players to reach the pinnacles and so on. But composure is that word, Buds. You said it. Like, you know, if you want to be more than just an A-League player, those chances you put away. Those chances can't be missed. And on the Box to Box podcast, which I listen to, great bunch of guys who do a great job covering the local game. You know, they had Nish on this week, and, you know, talking about his relationship to Popovich and all of that. And it made me feel even worse about what I said, because clearly there is a relationship there. And look, I don't want to dwell on Nish, because yes, some Gyldej chances that he should have put away, and he will be fuming at himself more than anyone else. But I want to pull on this thread a little bit, Buds, you know, that it's all on Dillis and so on. And I do think that, you know, defensively and some of the there are definitely issues there. But the players have to take some accountability as well. And it just seems to me that the high-pressure stakes, you know, it just wasn't there. And I know that we're missing quite a few players, but so are Adelaide. And this is the other reason why I want the players to take accountability, is that I think Adelaide probably, I think they have one more player, at the under-23s. You know, we had two key players, obviously, but they're not a very good side. You said this yourself, right?
They're absolute rubbish. They're absolute rubbish. Like, they didn't deserve that win at all. They're rubbish. We just fucking can't ever seem to capitalize on any moments, especially the big ones. And that's down to the way that these players are prepared. Mm. And if there's players that aren't performing at the 60th or 70th minute and they've done nothing for the game, they need to be hooked. He just doesn't have the in-game management that's required in these bigger games. And the season is now becoming more and more on the line, I believe, because we are floundering. We had a little blip, and this is probably one question for you both, was the run of four wins and the improved form there, is that the norm, or was that a blip?
You just hit the nail on the head what I was going to lead off with. That seems to be the blip, because we've reverted completely back to that early season form. And again, to bring up stuff that we've said in the past, at the back of last season, we were praising Dillis for being bold, for making big calls, tough decisions, sticking his neck out. And then as soon as he goes sort of safe and in almost in preservation mode, we start the season like we did. Then when the pressure is red hot and sky high, he does make some bold calls. We get a patch of form, and then it just reverts back to type again. I think the early season form and what we've seen in the last 2 weeks is more indicative of where we're at. Absolutely.
Okay. It'd be boring if I didn't play devil's avocado here, gents. Right? Yeah.
We were waiting for it, Dave.
And look, I agree on many of the fundamentals that you've laid out, right? I think there are certain issues with Dillis and match preparation and some in-game management. But changes were made, and changes that were made did affect the game. We got back into it. We equalised. We thought we took the lead. We'll get to that. And then, you know, there are a number of circumstances beyond the disallowed goal that, again, we will get to, that resulted in us coming away with nothing. Now, Dillis, for me, like, it feels to me like, as a career assistant who was thrust into it all, it's like he's learning on the job. And our expectations, rightly so, are much higher. And that's inescapable. So we move into the second half and things were still pretty fucking dire, weren't they, gents? But the game did turn on its head thanks to some of those substitutions. Jelasic, Grimaldi, the two that I guess stick out the most. Let's start to talk about the second half and how that evolved. But go on, mate.
When you're hooking your front three at the same time, it tells you everything that you need to know.
Yeah.
It was just, there's nothing. No attacking impetus, no link up play. The heads were dropping just purely from the raft of chances that were being blown, and there were so many chances being blown. I mean, you want to look at it statistically here, it was fucking insane. In the first half alone, we blew seven chances, seven serious chances on goal. It was 50-50 in that regard with the ball. Fast forward to the second half, we blow even more. We have 12 shots on goal in the second half. A few on target, two huge chances missed, like massive chances missed. We finally started to put some semblance of play together, and no surprise, it's Grimaldi again. The kid who pretty much every time he's come off the bench, he's shown something and won, almost won the second game of the season off his own back here. Like, what the fuck does this kid have to do more to get more minutes in this side over guys that, Dillis has signed that have done two-fifths of fuck all season? It's starting to get really annoying the way that this side's being composed. And it was a great finish from Grimaldi. Some good setup play, but then we're probably going to dwell on what happened just after that.
Well, don't jump to the second goal just yet, because you talked about hooking the front three, and Jing Rhys played a key role in the equaliser. Now, we've signed Charles Nduka, and Jing Rhys is the guy that is coming on for Virgos, who has once again disappeared into the ether. Clarkie, is Virgos drinking his own bathwater once he gets a bit of a run on? What's going on there? Because he had a good little purple patch, but it's back to whatever it is that he was delivering early on in the season.
I don't know. Maybe he's just one of those strikers that doesn't have the ability and the way he plays and his mentality to be one of those, hey, fellas, hop on. It seems heavily reliant on all the other pieces around him firing on all cylinders.
That's a really good insight, I feel, because I think we touched on this like a little while back.
It's been obvious for a season and a half. He needs
not an out and out striker, as in he needs someone else up top with him, I feel.
He might just be a bit of a fucking downhill skier. When it's all going good, he'll feast. And when it's all going shit, it's not, And look, it's unfair to compare him to say some of our past strikers. There were games where Bess, nothing was happening behind him. But what did Best do? He's like, fuck you. And he goes in there and he fucking makes something happen. Like, he's always just waiting for it to happen for him.
And I think in these systems that we seem to be playing forever, this 4-2-3-1, right? If you're going to have that one that I just mentioned there, that one needs to be fucking working their ass off.
Know who would work their ass off? Nick D'Agostino would fucking work his ass off.
Yeah. Let's let that one through to the keeper. But boys, okay. So the game evolves even further and we start to actually take the ascendancy. And we're in with a shout because it's 1-1. We're up against a side that isn't much chop, good travelling support in, and you can feel the waves of momentum. And as I said in the introduction, I don't know what the scenes were like where you boys were, but where I was, I leapt up off the couch because, I mean, the second goal, which I'll call a goal for the moment, the Mata masterclass to, I guess, thread the needle, find Grimaldi, and then Grimaldi takes a beautiful first touch and finishes so fucking beautifully, you know, the perfect fucking finish. And the sheer ecstasy around that. Boys, let's describe the emotions and the feelings around that, because this is the pivotal moment of everything in this podcast.
I thought it was a great moment in A-League history, in Melbourne Victory folklore, just one of those moments as a football fan where you're in absolute rapture that your team's come from behind in a terrible performance and won away. It's what being a fan's all about. But as I said before, it's you just probably have to put those feelings on ice now with this league, with the amount of fucking VAR calls that are, you know, now subjective by the letter of the law. And every fucking opposition fan will tell you the rules of the game and revel in the fact that, you know, we've missed out again. But then you'll be told that it's the correct call by the referees. But the director of the referees will then tell you that it's a subjective call. It's harder and harder for this league to be taken seriously with the level of refereeing. And Lachlan Keevers just, again, is inept to be able to make decisions on his own. The guy needs his hand held for everything. He's an absolute abomination of a referee, and the incompetence that just continues to happen with the referees and the standard of refereeing in this league and the absolute desecration of big moments in this league is just fucked. It's hard to watch. Why would people continue to tune in to watch this shit?
Mm-hmm. It's a really tough one because we're robbed of those moments that Dave talked about before, you know, those moments that why we watch football. And I can cop having a goal chalked off like that, but I can't have a goal being chalked off like that when it's this re-refereeing, it's this making it up as they go along. Budzer, you know, it just they say one thing, they do another, and then the referee's boss comes out and wastes everyone's time with saying a whole heap of stuff that's just contrary to almost anything that they had said previously, but still kind of washing their hands of it all.
Yeah, the whole thing about the rest of the league like reveling in this time, I feel like A lot of the people viewing it actually thought this was harsh, like a harsh situation. Now I'm only seeing what I see. Maybe everyone else. I know that there are obviously CFG fans and, you know, Newcastle grand final and stuff like that. People calling on that, but how did you see it, mate?
I think a lot of, I think, you know, you saw a lot of media types, you saw your Igaris and, you know, those kind of people saying game's gone. A lot of, you know, obviously Victory people saying game's gone, but, you know, all your Adelaide fans, all your Sydney fans, all your CFG fans, all your Newcastle fans, all your Brisbane Roar fans, so most of the league, everyone hates us and everyone revels in it. So unfortunately, we just have to probably just get stuck in when it happens to them, because it will happen to them one day, and hopefully in big games. Hopefully in big games it happens to them as well. So, you know, it wasn't our fault that that Newcastle doesn't have an extra phone line back in 2018. It wasn't our fault, but you know, these things happen. So we just have to fight fire with fire, really.
That's it. We have to cop these on the chin. That's what being a football fan is about. But yeah, whataboutism without extra detail and context is the idiot's argument point. So
a little bit of victory tax, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? Let's call it that.
So, I mean, the goal itself, right? Here's the thing. Cards out on the table, gents. Like, the rule is the rule. We can't get past that. Like, what makes this hurt for me, and I'm sure you and everyone else listening to this, mostly Victory fans, what makes this hurt more is, I guess, the occasion, the moment, the player, the fact that it was an absolute screamer of a goal, and, of course, the history, you know, the history of epic winners in Adelaide in front of a heaving away bay. That's what really stings the most. Do we want to dwell on the legalities? I know, Buds, I know you talked at length just now about the John Moss, I think his name was, is it John? Yeah, John Moss, the referee's boss. He's quizzed about it. You know, the APL have put out these things, but he's actually talked about it being a subjective call.
Did my head in that one, absolutely.
I mean, yes, the rule is the rule, right, Clarky? Like, I mean, technically, this should have been ruled out.
It's been a big week for the, but it's the rule enjoyers, pretty much. Yeah, maybe, but then there's an argument to be made that what John Moss or whatever the fuck his name is said was... That now I start to question and go, well, yeah, maybe the rule's written like that, but has this been re-refereed subjectively? Has this been re-refereed and like it's the reinterpretation of it? And we can start talking about the technicalities of all these sorts of things. I don't think we need to bore anyone with that. There's plenty of been that chat online this week, but. I don't know about you. I've been watching football a number of years, and I'm not so sure about that one. I'm not so sure. It's just it seemed good enough for the referees on the field to sort of, I guess, just deal with it. If you have to look at something like that for 5 minutes, that's where I have the problem. You're going to find something in that time because you're looking for something rather than just, you know, sort of administering a game at the speed at which it's played.
Yeah, and it's really – I hate the fact that we have to talk about VAR.
So do I, mate. I hate it. It sucks.
This podcast has a long history of being critical of VAR. There's no need for us to go over old ground again. But regardless of who is on the end of decisions like that, whether they are by the book and technically correct or whether they are mishaps, the game suffers. Fans suffer. Football isn't as good as it used to be as a viewing spectacle since VAR. It sucks the life out of the game. That's all I'll say on that one. Okay, gents, so the only other thing to say is that there was another goal after all of that. And I'm pretty sure all three of us would be unanimous in saying that as soon as that goal was disallowed, it really did feel like we would cop one, or was I alone there?
No, I was with you too, mate. It just was built for it, wasn't it? I mean, let's not dwell over the gloss over the fact they had one chalked off as well. It's fucked. It's game of momentum. You have a go on one of the football sites that adjudge these games and do the statistics and all the facts and the commentaries, and you have a look at that momentum swing, and it was just one for one. And I suppose most of the big momentum spikes for victory were wasted. Unfortunately, Adelaide just fucking seemed to just jag one at the end. I think I was too enraged in what was going on to even really be able to talk through the unfolding of that goal and how Ryan Kitto managed to score a winner against us. And then that's the bit that hurts. And I'm still burning. And if, you know, people want to listen to this pod and say it sounds like we have sour grapes, it's absolutely correct. I'm fucking fuming. It's a partisan podcast and I'm pissed about the decision and the results. And yep, sour grapes are plenty.
Yeah, that's it. There's no hiding our feelings here. I would like to formally apologise to all the loyal listeners out there for telling Ryan Kitto to go fuck himself at the end of last week's podcast, as is my custom, I guess, now 4-odd seasons into this caper with you boys. So, yeah, I would like to put my hand up for that one. I fucking called for that, I guess.
Yeah. Kitto, we got Johnny Yarl, Talent Time. We got, they were the only two players really offering forward threats, you know, apart from, you know, what Goodwin did early in the game. I thought he was pretty ineffectual. But I think at the end of the day, I hate saying we only have ourselves to blame in this one, but it's hard to not end the match discussion with that phrase, and that's where I'm going to do it, because we're going to go to the Balls of Steel, boys.
Yeah, the Balls. Well, there was only one man really deserving of three votes at the end of this one, and the fans got it completely correct in big FES own Grimaldi with the three. One Mutter again with two votes. I would like Mutter to relive his 3 weeks ago form and start putting that back onto the park for the boys in blue. He's got two votes. And Esposito, with a bad night for the defence, Esposito had a pretty solid outing. So looking forward to him being partnered probably by Roddy Miranda in the coming weeks. But that puts one out to a 10-point lead on 20 votes.
Wowee.
Second is Denis Jandreau, who remains on 10 votes from about round four. Macromoldi up to third with 7, DiRigo on 6, and Yelisic, Virgos and Santos on 4.
Very nice. Thank you, Budza. Let's take a wee break, and we'll be back shortly.
Hey, loyal Vuktorians. Thanks to the legends at Local Brewing Co. in Clifton Hill, we are thrilled to offer you a season-long FES exclusive discount for their fucking delicious ranges of beer, including the famous Victory Draft. Simply go to localbrewing.co, fill your cart, and at checkout, receive a massive 15% off discount when using the code MONDAVUK. Head on over to localbrewing.co and MONDAVUK.
And this week's winner of $40 to go and spend down at local is
Mark Hamilton. Well done, Mark. You have probably been on FES Patreon, I reckon, for a month or two now. And right again, if you sign up, You win stuff. So well done, Mark. You've won a voucher for you and whoever you want to take down to spend at the local brew house in Clifton Hill. Get some pints, get some pizza, get a charcuterie board. It's all yours to enjoy there. Thanks for your loyal patronage, and you go home with the prize this week.
Very good stuff. Good on you, Mark. Go and enjoy that. Now let's move on to the WUC. So it was a doubleheader. So those of you that were at Hindmarsh, or if you were lounging away, luxuriating away at home, watching a smorgasbord of A-League's football on Saturday, you were treated to many games, but sadly for the WUC, no wins in four, Clarkey. Alarm bells? I think alarm bells can be can be ringing.
It's definitely not how we would have envisioned the first 8 weeks of the season to go with the squad that'd been assembled and the history of this side. It is concerning. It's not. You know, impossible from here. Actually, they're still well within it. They're fourth, right? They're clinging on to fourth on goal difference. And there's another, 8 weeks to go? So, look, halfway point, not ideal. Yes, we had higher expectations, but, you know, plenty of time. The ex-victory player curse has struck the WUC.
Paige, why?
Yeah, with Paige Joyce scoring the winner for Adelaide United. So that's a stinger, that one. Struggling. And now Rihanna Polisina has a broken wrist as a result of that game, and I think has just had surgery this week. So she's going to be out for a little bit. So that is a pretty big blow to a side that needs to find something, and find something they need to, because they've got Sydney FC coming up this week at the home of the Matildas Sunday the 25th at 5 p.m. So if on the upcoming long weekend, if you're thinking about football and what you're going to do with your time off, you can go see the WUC on Sunday and then go see the VUC, or don't go see the VUC on Monday.
Very good.
Mom the girls.
Yep. No, it's plenty of choices this weekend if you're that way inclined. All right, let's get into some other topics. And I think this was a little bit unprecedented, gents. The club sending out a letter January 19th. So that was, Tuesday. Beg your pardon, Monday. This week, pretty quickly out into the inboxes, because it came through it for me at least at 9:48 a.m. talking about the Adelaide United fixture. Now, we're not going to read it all out here on the podcast, because most of you have probably seen it. Suffice it to say, it was quite lengthy and started with the usual pleasantries of, you know, gratitude around the support of the club and so on, but then went into basically pissing on the officiating in the league. Now, I saw it initially and I thought, oh, this is good, it's proactive, it's kind of grabbing the issue by the scruff of the neck, probably because we were all kind of feeling that way. But after reflecting on this for an additional day, I actually don't like it. I'm not thinking it's the right strategy. I think you can achieve a better result by just simply stating, you know, and you don't have to email all the members either. You can just put it out there as comms. We submitted a formal request to review the decision, and that's it. I don't know, gents, what you think, but for me, commenting on the officiating in the league probably just pours more fuel onto the fire, makes us look like we're being petulant and whiny when bad decisions probably happen just about in every game and every week of this league. What do you boys reckon?
Yeah, I don't get any of these emails from the club. I only get the ones where they're trying to sell us a T-shirt about beating Adelaide 16 years ago. I don't get any of these, which rather annoys me. Yeah, I was like you, Dave. I first thought, okay, this is different. This is, you know, the club finally, you know, getting a bit of backbone against the league. When for a long time we've lamented their lack of stance on anything, especially standing up for the fans, which, you know, they rarely still ever do. But they probably haven't needed to in the last year. So I digress. That's another discussion for another day. I don't know. I'm so anti the league and the state of refereeing and the state of many things in this league that I don't mind it. I'm not bothered by it. At least stand for something. That's where I'm at with it, really. It's never going to, I don't think it's ever going to sway a decision, but I think the more we can put a spotlight on just how bad the refereeing is and how bad the VAR is in this league, the better.
Yeah, look, I largely agree with sort of both of you in different ways. I think it was probably just a tad much, felt a little bit too far one way when we've been asking for a bit more of that, a bit more spine, as Buds has said, but then it sort of dragged on a bit. But at the same time, call a spade, call shit shit. So, yeah, kudos for sticking the neck out too, I guess. Look, situations like this with Melbourne Victory, you're not going to get a great deal of great discourse outside of the fan ranks because everyone's just going to be like, oh, sour grapes, oh, look at them cry and love it. So, fucking so be it.
Yeah, we'll leave that one there. I'm sure that I think the fact that the league have already got that Moss bloke out to justify the decision, I think it'll just be suck it up in terms of a response to whatever we happen to send out through. You know, Dillis came out strongly in his press conference after the game talking about, oh, I'm sure we'll get an email about it being wrong. I don't think we will, Arthur. I don't think we're getting that email that you're hoping for.
Nah.
Mate, all right, we'll move on to Daniel Arzani. Gents, there's been some rumours about this happening and it's official now. He's coming to the City Football Group on loan. So 2 weeks in a row we get to talk about players that literally just left us in the last window, arriving on loan at our crosstown rivals. Okay, so I got a lot to say on this, but before I do, I want to give you guys the floor because it doesn't, I mean, yeah, it's annoying, but I'm now a bit like, oh, well, fuck it. What do you boys think?
Yeah, I think, don't ever get attached to a player in this league for your team. That's about it. I said it on the Discord. I think this just goes to show that when we're watching the team and you sit there and you observe and you're like, these players look like they don't give a fuck. They don't give, you know, they don't care about the shirt, this and that. They don't give a fuck. They could not and do not give a fuck.
In the past, as fans of this club, I think we used to really revel. Like, we loved the fact that our badge meant something, you know, like we took pride in that we would never sign anyone from CFG. You know, this used to be a big thing. It's not anymore, and it's probably coincided with John Didelitz's arrival at the club. I think sentiment is out the window a little bit. And, you know, based on your comment here, Buds, about players not caring, you know, I put the question to you both: is everyone just now a mercenary until they aren't? Like, is that how we have to look at these things? Because in the past, we meant something, or the badge, the club, the shirt, whatever you want to describe it as, it stood for something. And is this also, as a sub question to my question, you know, part of this whole legacy thing that we keep talking about, how we keep leaning in as a club on the good old days, as it were? What do you reckon?
Australian football and its player base and all that, it's just blokes looking for a job, looking to progress their career, get called up for World Cups. It's just the nature of it. Blokes are going to come back and take the best opportunity that's right for them. Once you make peace with that, you're going to see, just understand the free movement and the recycling that people seem to get so pissed off about in this league. It's just where we're at, the talent pool, our local players, it's the cost. Just it is what it is. And yeah, you sort of hit the nail on the head, Buds. You can't get too attached. There's always going to be some blokes that play 200 games for your club and then, you know, or 300 and then retire. Or you get some journeyman European come and finish his career with you and it's like, oh yeah, he's one of ours. But, you know, realistically, that bloke's had 15 clubs before coming to the VUC. Just is what it is, really. Enjoy them while they're there.
I don't think there are too many on our list who haven't played for another A-League club. But you look at the current side of ours and you go, who can you see that wouldn't play for Melbourne City, like, if given the opportunity in their career sometime? And you probably sit there and you go, Nishan Volupale and Roddy Miranda. They're probably the only two on the list that you'd sit there and go, they probably wouldn't. Everyone else absolutely would. And look, the Arzani one doesn't, I couldn't give two shits. He came from Melbourne City. He started at Sydney Yep. FC in his youth career and he played for Melbourne City long before he played for us. He just can't seem to make it overseas at all. And now he's back after three appearances for Hungarian giants Ferencváros. I'm not really bothered by this one. I actually wouldn't mind him back, but he's probably a position that we don't need. I just like him because he makes things happen at this level. He's up and down, but he makes things happen.
Yeah, mercenary, eh? It's like it's since the JD era, I'm pretty sure it's like Bruno, Azani, Brillante, Hamill, Valadon, Insera, Boss, Kamau, Genro.
Well, wasn't John's appearance this week interesting that they wheeled him out and said, hey, people are asking what it is you actually do. You might have to put your shirt on and look busy. I thought that was
like a performance review, wasn't it? It's like, how are you coming up against your KPIs?
It's like when a supermarket executive gets put in front of the cameras and tells you how thrilled and amazed they are and how proud they are of being able to give value back to the consumers while gouging everyone. It was a really killer performance that hopefully he should put that on his LinkedIn. Absolutely. Exceptional politician.
Jamestown Analytics was talked about a fair bit in that clip, and we talked about it last week before as well, particularly when Nduka was signed, because, you know, as you dwelled on quite a bit, Budza, this very much screams Jamestown Analytics, and JD confirmed that in this little clip. And little birdie's not sure, yeah, you know, we can't verify much, you know, but apparently had an appearance in a friendly game against Malvern City for the youth team. Wasn't much chop. We can't necessarily verify that for sure. I'm hoping that Charles Nduka is the first little sproutling that we see at Melbourne Victory when it comes to Jamestown Analytics, because a lot is riding on it. All right, boys, let's move on and preview the game this coming Monday, Australia Day, January 26th, Amy Park at 5:30 p.m. So nice, friendly time again. We've had a couple of those recently. So, boys, the under-23 rep players will be back. So that's Rawlins and Valadon. Obviously add some steel to the side. Buds, I know you'll be relieved. You've been really you haven't been impressed with Insera at right back, so you'd assume that Rawlins comes back in there. Valadon remains to be seen given the options in midfield, but
he should come in to replace Jean Rowe. That's my opinion. He absolutely on form. Denis Jean Rowe doesn't deserve to start again after that performance against Adelaide. What's he done?
First few weeks were good, but yeah, it's dropped off.
It's dropped off a lot since that red card.
Yeah, bang on.
Not really of the pedigree that we expected.
Yeah, I guess, Clarkie, would you agree? I mean, I think the best we looked, you know, particularly during that 4-game spell was, you know, with that combination of Dorigo, Valadon and Mata, right?
Yep. No, I'd agree. It's now another instance of Denis Jean Rowe. He's probably held to a little bit of a higher expectation by, I think, at least us and the fans. It's, you know, he's meant to be one of the main pieces of this, and he's patchy at best. So if you know, Valadon comes back in decent shape, I think Denny's got some work to do this week on the track, or he might be going back to the bench.
Yep. So, look, Joe Lolly's a good chance to come back for them. He's been missing, I think, the last 2, potentially 3 games. But Yuli in their midfield, who we talked about when they thumped us 3-0, because Ocon Engsler and Yuli, young midfield combination, but bossed us last time around. He'll miss due to his red card against Wellington. But it's been an inconsistent month of football from Sydney, but they're still in second spot. So, you know, it's like this is a weird season. We've talked about this a fair bit, right, boys?
Which makes our inability to take the chances to win the games that we've had all the more frustrating. When, yeah, you're absolutely right, Dave. Auckland have only won 2 out of their last 5. Sydney have only won 2 of their last 5. Brisbane Roar have lost 3 of their last 5. City have only won 2 of their last 5. MacArthur have only won 2 of their last 5.
Yeah, wow.
There's been points dropped everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. And these 2 losses that we've just had, when really both winnable games, we're staring down the barrel. We should be actually, with the way that the league's gone, we could have been sitting in second spot. Think about that. We're 9th now. So crazy season, an amazing tale of, you know, what could have been so far. But again, this is a must win, because you start staring down the barrel of 3 losses in a row after halfway through the season. It starts becoming a little bit harder to gain one of those better positions in the table for finals.
Yep, big game. I have 0 confidence yet again. The 1 week of fleeting optimism was fun while it lasted, but I'm firmly back in the pessimism realm.
Can I tell you what my big frustration is with this season? Having to watch Nikos Virgos every week. You know the thing that starts frustrating me the most? Okay, the frustrating thing about having to watch Virgos every week is to have to also see what the fuck Eli Adams is doing for Newcastle.
Oh, my God. Oh my God, the bangers. He only scores bangers.
It was 18 months ago, wasn't it, that he evacuated the team from the hotel on our trip to Wellington by burning a piece of toast at breakfast. How much I would love him to be evacuating our team on away trips. Again, he is a serious talent that we just couldn't get on the park or give a bit more patience to.
It's becoming a pattern over the history, isn't it? Now, there's been a few kids that, because of our fucking stupid win now mentality that ran through the club, that a few kids that we probably should have been a bit more patient with went to other teams and found their place with a bit of football and maybe a little bit less scrutiny upon them. Yeah, it's a tough watch watching Eli do what he does, but he's playing in a well-coached side. This is a Melbourne Victory podcast, but the Newcastle Jets play some good football. Why the fuck can't we do that shit?
It's fair to say Eli is a Jet. Gents, predictions, do we dare? I'm getting sick of doing predictions, I've got to be honest, because I don't know which team's going to turn up. We're a schizophrenic team in a schizophrenic league, and I'm just going to say 0-0 because I've got nothing else.
I'm gonna follow you in with that 0-0, but what my prediction, actually, I'm pleading, Melbourne Victory admin, please no memes. Please no shitposting memes. Please. Every fucking time you do it, we lose. Enough.
It's not got the best strike rate, have they? With the early memes. I think we're going to struggle based off the last 2 weeks to struggle to score against this back four of Sydney. I just don't see it, but I think it's going to be a really crap game. 1-0 to Sydney FC, I think.
Okay, well, that's all we have for this week. Hope to see you all out there on Monday, Australia Day, and I want to say Mon the Vuck. I really do, because that's what we're here to do. But I don't know.
Say it.
Mon the Vuck.
Go Victory.
Mon the Vuck. And fuck Patrick Wood.